It's hour two of the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you on the programme this morning. Just a few of your comments before we go for the bingo numbers. We were speaking earlier to Katrina of Katrina's Hair Salon in Letterkenny after a cyclist hit one of her customers as she was exiting the salon, knocking her to the ground and causing her to be brought to hospital. Caller says Katrina is so right. The traffic warden or Gardaí need to be more proactive in the rules about e-scooters and cyclists on footpaths. There definitely needs to be an education programme on the rules to young people on where to use their scooter and bikes. I would just like to comment with regards to the accident on Lower Main Street, Letterkenny. I was there at the time. I feel the authorities need to enforce some form of legislation or fines, as this is happening all the time. I want to reiterate what both Katrina and Christy said. It's only a matter of time before there'll be a fatality. Wishing this lady a speedy recovery. Caller says they are a real danger and should be banned or fined. Another caller says, why doesn't the traffic warden patrol the pavements if the Gardaí can't? There should be no scooters, bicycle signs on the footpaths. Donal, if you look at the footpaths around the town where you can see in some places you can cycle on the footpaths, indeed, there are places where there are cycle paths and they're clearly marked with a picture of a bicycle, and absolutely, they can be used. The problem with the Lower Main Street area of Letterkenny in particular is it's a busy area. The footpath is narrow and there is a raised sort of brick curbing on the right-hand side of the footpath before you get to the road. So it narrows the footpath and means there is nowhere for a bicycle or an e-scooter to go. Another caller says, my husband and I were coming out of a cafe on the Upper Main Street area. Again, a young man on an e-scooter was speeding on the footpath. He knocked into my husband. Thankfully, he wasn't knocked over. The young man never apologised. Another caller says, if this was a person running on the sidewalk, would she ask for all such people to be banned? The young fellow was safer on the path. If you go slow, I don't see the problem. The issue here may be that the cyclist wasn't going slow. The cyclist was travelling at a significant enough speed to carry a lady along and then knock her to the ground, causing her to go to hospital. It may have been safer for the cyclist. It certainly wasn't safer for the lady who was hit. Now, is there a discussion to be had? There absolutely is. Just listening to the council housing conversation, we spoke earlier to Rachel about the protest taking place outside the council offices in Dunloe on Thursday evening. Caller says, just listening, the councillors and the executive have abjectly failed the people of Donegal by neglecting to provide adequate levels of social housing in county development plans over the past decade. On top of the defective blocks issue, there are well in excess of 1,100 council houses also affected by defective blocks and no plans on how to accommodate council tenants, let alone the thousands of private homes affected. There are funds available with an underspend reported by the Department of Housing last year. There are multiple sites available countywide. You can see them on property sites. The council executive refused to bid for them. This is a council issue, so claims the caller. Now, I know they do have a number of major plans in line and they're presenting regular updates to the members with regards to their plans, but certainly there is a deficiency and a shortage of housing at the moment. Caller says, yesterday a car overtook a group of cyclists on the inside hard shoulder in the Glentoher area of Carndonna. That is amazingly dangerous. Caller says, could we get all the staff back to county council offices working and get them to answer phones? This will be a big start. At least we'd have someone to talk directly to you, leave a message, and then they say there was no message. It's a total joke. Caller says, nobody in Dunloe has any involvement in building houses. Housing construction is based in Lifford, yes, but there are local officials and local council staff based in the office in Dunloe, and I suppose really where a protest takes place, the question is going to be, is it going to get a profile and is it going to be seen? And I suppose in terms of the Tog Tiha movement that Rachel and others are taking part in, they believe that they will hold a demonstration in Dunloe. I would not be surprised if this were replicated in other areas. The caller says there are a large number of beautifully new built homes, turnkey finished, sitting waiting for over a year, ready to go. Donegal County Council are sitting on their hands due to unresolved negotiations over price because of rising costs of the build. We definitely know to cost increases everywhere, costs rise. Why should the builder be at a loss? Now, we know there are a number of discussions taking place. There's one in Milford, there's one in Carn, and there are others as well where the council is in discussions with builders, and there are also in at least one case, the potential involvement of one of the social housing providers as well. And there are questions over the money being paid for the houses. Now, that is an issue that's under discussion. I'm not going to get into it here, but it has been discussed at great length on the programme. I'm going to go for the bingo numbers in just a moment. Just before we do, just want to give you this message, and you always know you're in the middle of the summer when we start talking about back-to-school transport. Caller says, we are looking for a lift from the Falkara-Dunfanaghy-Creasla area for a secondary school child wishing to travel to Milford for the upcoming school year 24-25. We've been informed by Bus Éireann there are no seats available from Creasla to Milford, and they are not going to increase the capacity on this route. Ideally, someone who has similar school hours or even another parent in a similar situation. We are willing to share travel expenses. We'd be obliged if you could contact Highland Radio if you can help out. So if you can help out there, looking for a lift from the Falkara-Dunfanaghy-Creasla area for a secondary school child wishing to travel to Milford for the upcoming academic year, I presume it's for secondary school, Bus Éireann have no seats available from Creasla to Milford, and they're not going to increase capacity. So if you can help there, please contact the station and we will put you in touch with the family concerned. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, 20 minutes past 10 o'clock. Let's go to Zoom, because this week is National Farm Safety Week, and we're joined on Zoom this morning by Marcus O'Halloran, who's an executive director at AgriAware. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning to you, and good morning to your listeners.
A very important week, Marcus. We know there have been all too many tragedies on farms across the country, and Donegal sadly has not been immune. A number of deaths over recent years in the county here, and even apart from the deaths, many, many serious injuries as well on farms right across the country. That's something that AgriAware and others are really trying to put a focus on this week.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Farm Safety Week is an initiative from IFA and the Yellow Willies in UK, and we're happy as a body that's funded partially by IFA to be able to enable the campaign and kind of take it that bit further. But Safety in Every Field is a campaign that we're running for this week. It's simply about highlighting the different dangers that are around the place. It is a dangerous environment that we work in every day. You know, farmers are expected to be mechanics, electricians, plumbers, we're expected to be vets at times, and we operate machinery and we look after animals, and you know, there's no other sector in society that is as exposed, I suppose, is what I'm looking to say, as what farmers are on a daily basis. And what we're trying to do is just to encourage farmers to think and look at the jobs that they're doing, and just think, you know, is there a safer way to do this, or have I everything in the right place for this job?
And there's more and more automation as well. There's more and more that can go wrong in terms of mechanically and traditionally. I mean, I certainly remember as a child, the ads that were on TV warning people of the dangers of slurry pits and having children going near slurry pits, and that sort of thing was well highlighted. But now on the farm, it's a much more technological, a much more mechanical place. There's a lot more moving parts.
A lot of that technology has made life simpler. But what we need to remember is farms are busier places than they were, 20 years ago. And what we don't have on farms is as many people around them that we had maybe 20 and 30 years ago. You know, the family farm model traditionally was where, you know, the family was based out of the house, and there was people kind of knocking around the whole time, and the farmer was out in the farm. And whereas now whoever's in the house is possibly out working as well. And that's, I suppose, an income piece that we're not going to get into today. But you know, all of the eyes that would have been there, especially with children around the farms, might not necessarily be there. And as part of our work this year, we would have done a lot of work in schools, where we've 23,000 primary school students educated on farm safety awareness. And the whole idea of this really is to make them, that bit more aware of the dangers that are on farms, and particularly when they have their friends over, or if they're out and they're heading out to whoever, is it granddad or granny or mammy or daddy or whoever, that's out in the farm. You know, there is blind spots, there is dangers around animals and fields, there is dangers around water, there is dangers around electricity. The messages that we're trying to get across to those, to the younger audience, so that we can make our farms and our countryside a safer place to live and work in.
A really effective campaign that's been running up to recently, I thought was very effective indeed, was the one effectively warning about complacency. It wasn't saying look out for the big, huge dangers on the farm. It was look out for the things that happen every day, the things that happen every day, the things you do every day, the things you do every day so much that you now do automatically and you now do without thinking. And when you start doing something without thinking, that's when you're moving into dangerous territory.
And it is. Look, we're dairy farming at home, and you know, it's... even when you're closing gates on animals and different things like that, there's always a danger that a gate could be kicked back. You know, there's always a danger that, you know, even when you're hooking on something onto a tractor or the blind spots behind the tractors, we need to be consciously aware of those the whole time. And to check our surroundings, you know, we can't, I suppose one of the things that a lot of farmers, including ourselves, may be guilty of, especially around in the winter time when we're at silage pits and when we're taking silage out of the pits, you know, it is important that farmers aren't just driving up and down those silage pits and that they are constantly giving a look around. But look, we could talk all day about the different things that are out there that are dangerous to farmers. It is a dangerous place to work in. But weeks like this are important in that they do highlight those. And I think, you know, they are recognised by farmers. And farmers do take the time to consciously think about about safety too. You know, they are busier places to work than they've ever been. And with, you know, income issues, as I said before, a lot of farmers and will be working part-time, and those part-time farmers are possibly doing the jobs in the evening time when it's getting that bit darker, or, you know, when fatigue might be there. So they're higher risk probably categories than most. But, you know, we're all at risk, and we just need to be conscious. And it's weeks like this to highlight the good work that's been done. It's weeks like this to highlight, you know, that we are at danger the whole time, but just to be consciously aware of that, and is there an easier or safer way to do it?
And just to put this into context for people, the importance of this. Last year, there were 43 workplace fatalities in this country, 43 across the country. Of those 43, 16, that's 37%, took place on farms. So 37% of workplace fatalities in this country last year took place on farms. That is a sobering statistic.
It is. And look, I think one thing that to really highlight here is, you know, and I'm not going in on them now or anything, but I do think that, you know, the use of mobile phones, especially with tractor driving, is something that people need to become that bit more savvy about. You know, we've seen issues over the last number of years around using mobile phones. You only have to look most days of the week and you'll see somebody on a phone in the tractor. You know, we have to get that bit better at that. So we do. You know, it does only take a split second for something to happen. But that being said, you know, that 37% is there for a reason. It's there because we, as I said to you at the very start, we are mechanics, we're electricians, we are, we can be vets some days, we can be welders, we can be whatever. But we have to be all those things to be farmers so that we can actually create a sustainable product and look after our animals in the best possible way. And that's the nature of the game that we're in. And, you know, weeks like this really are just to remind farmers to be safer and to encourage them really to look at best practices of that and to highlight it, especially to younger people as well, that farmers aren't playgrounds. They are working environments. And it's up to all of us to make those as safe as possible place to be.
The campaign is going under the name Safety in Every Field. And I have to give kudos to your PR people. That's a great name for a campaign. Really, really good name indeed. You'd be encouraging farmers and others to look at the videos, to read the messages, to read the pieces, because we can always, I suppose, have this thing. I know that. I've seen that before. I know all that. I don't have to look at that. And maybe no harm for people. Look, if they come across the messages on their social media, wherever, actually take the time to sit down and read it, sit down and watch it. You never know. You might learn something.
No, absolutely. You know, we have a suite of videos coming out over the course of the week, you know, between livestock handling and safety, child safety on the farm, around cattle flush safety. You know, anybody that has ever dosed an animal of 2 years age or a year and a half up, they know the difficulty in catching that animal in the brush, and there's safer ways of doing that. So I suppose we'll bet on this week Hayes Mullins, who will be well known to a lot of your listeners, that will be talking about that. We have a piece on tractor safety and blind spots, and especially around the PTO. We have bull safety, surrey safety, uses of chemicals in the milking parlour. We have a bit around quads. And then there's just, I suppose, the last piece then that we will have is around a primary school teacher who was actually one of the participants in the Safe Farm Futures programme that we had this year, which again had 23,000 students take part in it. And we did over 60 different visits to schools in that. So really effective campaign, and really strong messaging has come out for the students, thank God.
I mentioned earlier that I recall as a child watching ads on TV warning, particularly about slurry. And there was a very stark one about slurry pits that I will never forget. Michael McClaverty is a county councillor in the Dlenthes, MD. Michael, good morning.
Morning, Donald. How's things?
Not so bad at all. And you have a recollection of those ads as well, and you believe they should come back?
I have as well, Donald, yes, same as yourself. I totally do believe they should come back. As I was saying to Shannon there, the producer, before we got on live on air there, I remember back in the day, so do you, when all these ads were on, but as I was saying to Shannon, back, whatever, 25, 30 years ago, maybe slightly longer, you didn't have Facebook, you didn't have internet, you didn't have TikTok and so on. And now with social media and all the things that are going now, Donald, to catch people's attention, both young and old, there was never more outlets to put these ads up on. And for whatever reason or some reason, the powers that be seem to want to move away from this kind of stuff, whether they feel it's too dramatic or too drastic or up there, I don't know. But I know at the time when they were on, the same as you know, the same watching them, that made you pay attention, and you thought about it when you went out to do whatever, whether it be slurry or whatever, or handling animals, so on, etc. You thought about it when you went out to the field or to the farmyard after that ad was over. Like. And as well as that, they were on quite frequent as well, usually at timely intervals, an evening time and so on, when people were having a dinner or whatever the case may be, when it did catch people's attention. But for whatever reason now in society, as I say, we seem to be moving into society now. If it doesn't suit, or if it's not nice, or if it's a bit dramatic, or if it's maybe more to the fact, it's actually telling the truth of what's going on, do it. Don't show it to the people. And that's so wrong, Mike. And I would definitely encourage to get all these ads back, or get modern day ads back, whichever they want to do at the minute. But get them back hard hitting, and the way they were before, Donald, that you and I recall clearly, and it done no harm. It didn't do me or you any harm. We thought about it, and I'm sure for the young people of today growing up, it won't do them any harm either. It'll actually educate them. And better still, Donald, taking it further if need be, get it into the curriculum, get it into the schools, to save and prevent farm accidents and deaths and everything else that has happened. We all know slurry in particular is lethal, deadly. There's nothing probably more lethal like it on earth as such, and forms of a gas as such. And at all avenues, that needs to be highlighted, how serious it is.
It's a good point and a fair point, Michael, and thank you very much indeed. The only thing I can't help but think, but you and I are harking back to a days when the family all sat down and watched the 6 o'clock news, and we all watched Hawaii 5-0, and we all watched RTE1 television as a family, and everyone saw it. And it's a very different media world now. And I suppose, as you said, there are so many choices between TikTok and social media and YouTube. You could put on 20 ads and 90% of people probably wouldn't see them because there is just so much choice out there. But it's a point well made, Michael, and I would certainly agree with you, and thank you very much indeed for making it.
You're welcome, Donald. But as a person, made a very good point the last day. What is the difference, you know, when we're growing up, when we have 5 or 6 stations and we have 400 stations now in the television?
Well, of course.
And people aren't happy now. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, there's so much choice. When you had less, when you had less variety, less choice, people seem to know what everybody else is doing, and they seem to be seeing ads and everything else. And now we have so much, it just seems to get lost, don't it?
Bruce Springsteen had a song several years ago called 57 Channels and Nothing On. Now it's 400 Channels and Nothing On. But, Michael, I take your point, and we're going down a little side avenue now, so I'm going to say good morning to Michael. Thanks very much indeed. And we'll talk again soon, no doubt. Bye. Going back to you, Marcus. That point, Michael, is making, I mean, you know, does more need to be done in terms of putting out public service ads like those, and maybe putting them on TikTok, maybe putting them on Facebook or X or wherever, putting them where young people are actually going to engage with them.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I can remember a road safety advertisement that was out in, I'd say, 94, 95, and, you know, it was around seatbelts, and the end result wasn't a pretty one. Me as a 2 or 3 year old saw that, and I've never not worn a seatbelt since.
I remember it well.
And never, ever forgot the ad either. Frightened the life out of me. And I actually think it's a good thing. I think, you know, survivor stories are a great thing. And I think that those kind of advertisements are the harsher the reality, you know, it is a reality. And it's a potential, a realistic outcome of an accident. So, no, look, I do think that. And I will take that on board in terms of our own advertising or engagement in the farm safety space going forward, Donald, for sure.
Marcus O'Halloran, Executive Director at AgriAware, the Safety in Every Field social media campaign launched this week. Farm Safety Week got underway today, lasts until Friday, July 26th. Marcus, thank you very much indeed.
Good morning, Donald.
It's 25 to 11 on the 9 Sunday Show here on Highland Radio. Joined on the line by Sarah. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Sarah, you were looking at the Sunday papers yesterday, and yes, in one of the yes papers, it pointed out that 10 companies were paid 88 yes million euro by the Irish yes state for providing accommodation yes over the course of 3 months.
Yes, yes, yes. Really, Donald, I was shocked and horrified at reading that 88 million was paid out to hotels, B&Bs. You know, these people are making billions and millions out of the Irish taxpayer. Now, I'm not talking about refugees and asylum seekers. I'm talking about the providers that are providing this. And, you know, it's not a bit wonder, really, that people are raged and angry at the government. I have a brother who has Alzheimer's, very bad with it. And he can't even access care. But he can't even get a day, you know, for somebody to look after him.
Yeah.
And his wife is under very severe pressure, and he can't even get respite for one day. You know, and, you know, this madness really should stop. You know, this, you know, people that are paying tax all their life, and next thing, that 88 million is being paid to these providers. It is absolutely shocking. Absolutely shocking. And it should stop immediately.
The state's going to argue that it has a international obligation to provide
yes
support.
Yes, Donal, yes. The Geneva Convention, 1951. How many years ago was that, Donal?
73
years ago. Yeah. It's outdated. It's dated. There's a queer difference between 1951 and 2024. That needs to be updated, you know. And there is another thing. There is an opt-out clause. We don't have to take all those people in. And it's a scandal and must be halted immediately. That's all I have to say, Donal. I think it's absolutely shocking that the Irish flag, but that Geneva Convention, that should be updated. That's 73 years ago.
Yeah.
73 years ago. There's a clear difference between, you know, how things have changed 73 years ago to 2024. Do you think?
Absolutely. It's a fair point. Well made. Sarah, thank you very much indeed.
All right. Thanks, Donal, for the call. Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, okay. Bye-bye. And those figures contained in the Sunday papers yesterday. Now we're going to move on to Zoom because a caller got in touch with the show, asked if we would discuss the disgraceful road surface being experienced throughout the whole county, but in particular the Twin Towns area. Anyone that travels regularly through Ballybuffet and Stranora will be well aware of the state of the road. And we're joined on the line by someone who knows more than most about the Twin Towns of Ballybuffet and Stranora, Councillor Patrick McGowan, who has been a representative of that area for many, many years on Donegal County Council. Patrick, good morning to you.
Morning, Donal.
Pleasure to have you. Patrick, in terms of the comment being made by our caller, the state of the roads in the Twin Towns in particular are something which is terrible. Now, we know that there have been numerous roadworks over the Twin Towns for the past while, and it's not completely finished yet. I mean, can you promise any respite to the people who are concerned?
Yeah, well, first of all, as you said, like the council have been waiting many, many years for Irish Water to come on and upgrade the sewer, and which we're all delighted they have spent multi-millions of euros there within the town between there and Buncrana doing it up. And we had to wait for them to do it because otherwise you'd be accused of tearing the road and then digging it up afterwards. And that was delayed for different reasons. Work has, I understand most of the work, not all of it, is done. So, we're just sort of waiting now for them to say they're completed. And then we have to wait then for the department to, give us the funding then to resurface it. Now, we don't have an allocation yet, so we are waiting. We'll probably be waiting for the end of the year when these budgets are announced that we will get a budget for it. Like, but that would be the main reasons, particularly around the Avenue and the Main Street in Belfast and Norris, because of all them sewage works. And it was overdue to get them roads actually resurfaced now. Same actually in Kettle Funds, the same there, Irish Water, just after completing a major mains water mains within the state too. And you can see that is very, very bad. But as I say, both them projects will be put forward now towards the end of the year for funding for next year for complete overlay. And then we have to wait then to see if we're allocated that money.
In the shorter term, there has been work done to fill potholes at times and temporary patch up jobs. And the caller is saying, you know, they're not happy with the with those jobs when they're done. And I mean, it can be done; it doesn't last any length of time. And then the filling is out, and the pothole is as bad as it was. And they're questioning, you know, are potholes being repaired correctly? Is there a better way of doing this?
No, look, we all agree that the best way, if you have a road getting into poor condition, the best way is completely resurface it. That's it. The council, man, everybody in the council, everybody would agree with that and realise that. The problem is when you're waiting, you can't resurface all of the roads. You have to sort of do them on a priority basis. But in the meantime, all during the winter time, what the council does, they use that coal tire that you can buy it in the shop there, like that coal tire they carried around maybe a pick up for in a week, because when it's raining every day all winter, the men are out in the winter time, and basically they just throw it into the hole, and that displaces the water. They roll over it, and hopefully, maybe on a good day, it might last another day, depending how the condition of the road and everything else. But now, this time of year, you can see them out with these, what's called velocity patchers. That's out now where they're spraying hot tire and chips in the good weather and that. And they are a more lasting solution. But again, they're all a temporary, fix. Now, if you have a very, very good road and you've had asphalt, maybe 4 or 6 inches of asphalt, you can go out, cut out square on it and repair it that sort of way, bring in contractors. But a lot of the cases, a lot of the roads that we have, there's very little foundation underneath them. It's that wet mix. So if you dug into a tire and chip road, you wouldn't go down 2 or 3 inches. You'd come into sort of a gravelly base. So that's very hard to cut out. And the best way for filling that is hot tire and chips. But there has to be a certain temperature, 8 to 10 degrees, before they'll use hot tire and chips. Otherwise, when it rains, the tire will just run down the road. But look, we all agree the best way to do this is to completely resurface the road, and hopefully we'll get an announcement for funding for Balbuffet and Kestrel Fund, because both of them are urgent need of it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's got to be a substantial amount of money to allow a full job to be done, because there's no way it's going to be done under the count and standard maintenance budget. It's got to be over and above the council's maintenance budget, because the maintenance budget just will not have anywhere near enough to do the work that's going to need to be done to get that fixed properly.
Yeah, the council maintains, gets a budget from the county roads, and then the TIA give a separate maintenance budget for the national primary and national secondary roads, and it's certainly very much the poor cousin when it comes to that. Like, you know, that if the council had the money, they would soon spend it. There's no money goes back, ever goes back from the council roads budget. Everything is spent year on year. And as I say, but that will be a major problem there now to do, Stenorder and Balfay main streets. They have needs a complete asphalt overlay in the middle of the town. You don't use tire and chips in the middle of a town except for patching. So we look forward to doing. We have to obviously lobby very, very hard for it, you know.
Yeah. And the other thing to bear in mind is, until such a time as we get the bypass and we get the 10T projects up and running and we get a bypass of the Twin Towns, the reality is, the Balbuffet Stranorder, that road is the main road between Derry, Letterkenny, Donegal Town, Ballyshannon and Sligo. So there are heavy goods vehicles, buses, all manner of heavy trucks and buses and whatever going up and down that road every day. So it is an N road. It's a national road, and it's taking all the traffic a national road takes.
Yeah, look, from 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 days a week, you can see it. All the lorries coming in and out of the county, heavy vehicles, have to come through Balbuffet. The only lorries and vans and stuff you'll see in Letterkenny or Buncrana, Donegal Downs, people actually getting in to the shops or dropping off. Balbuffet have to come through. There's no other way. So it would warrant more funding. And we did have the minister in the county there a couple of months ago, Jack Chambers, and he drove to Balbuffet and Stenorder. He also drove on the road from Kestrelfund to Balbuffet. Now, he has been moved since, you know, and he did express his opinion that it needed doing. He could see it himself, but someone else has moved on. But nevertheless, the council will be putting out their annual list of projects for the county, and I'm sure Balbuffet and Stenorder and Kestrelfund will both be on that list. So we will all be lobbying very, very hard to get a permanent reinstatement of them roads.
Councillor Patrick McGowan, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald.
Okay, look, Councillor Patrick McGann there at County House in Lifford, a plenary meeting with Donegal County Council getting underway very shortly. I'm a recovering cancer patient. I went in today to my GP to make an appointment. The receptionist said I can't take an appointment here. You have to phone in. I said, can I call you while standing here and make an appointment? Do you have any? To which she replied, if you phone, I'll check. I made a phone call while standing in front of her. She asked why I need it and said a nurse will call me back. The nurse called me back. I went through the same thing, full explanation of why I need the appointment, to which the nurse replied, the doctor will call you back. Yeah, I mean, look, I know I've had the experience of trying to get something sorted in a GP surgery, and I'll be honest, I started ringing the day before I needed to get it done because I reckoned it could take an entire morning. And it did take the guts of a morning, actually. Can you please address this area if a GP availability, especially to our elderly, this new idea that you ring on the day for an appointment is absolutely unacceptable. Receptionists are being given too much responsibility and then being blamed for the system. It's the senior GPs and owners of the practice that need to change their stance and give appointments, especially to our very ill and elderly. The clinics are a joke at the moment. They urgently need addressed. And it's an ongoing issue. And sometimes appointments are all very well, but sometimes people need to go to the doctor and they just go to the doctor and expect to be seen. It's a difficult one. It really is a difficult one. But maybe it does need to be reevaluated. And maybe what we also need to do is get some sort of a national campaign to ensure that we have sufficient GPs, because we know there are parts of the county now where health centres are not operational and GPs are being centralised. So if you are in an area where you previously had a GP, now you may have to go to the next area. And what that's basically doing is that's just piling extra patients onto the GP in the next area. So it isn't as though there's an extra GP being brought in to take this new influx. There isn't. It's just more and more and more people being dealt with by the same GPs. So they're trying to bring in these appointment systems and these systems to make it easier and to make it more workable. But it's not always going to work and it's going to cause problems. Caller says, I remember watching videos in the 90s about farms. 13, 14-year-olds were driving tractors in the videos. You're not allowed to drive until you're 16. Cameras distract farmers. We can't promote this. Now, looking at a few more of your comments. I wonder if Simon Harris was brought through the gridlock of traffic on Friday from the Dry Arch into the town, and what if there was a real emergency situation with ambulance and fire trucks trying to get through it? I'm sure Simon Harris was, and I'm sure he did experience the traffic issues in Letterkenny. When I exit a building, I stand in the doorway and check the footpath left and right before exiting or yielding to all types of traffic on the footpath, pedestrian or otherwise. That harks back to our discussion about the bicycles and the e-scooters earlier. This issue has been spoken about now for months, says the caller, and still nothing has been done. I haven't seen a guard or a traffic warden stop a single person on a bike or a scooter on the footpaths. What will the councillors do about them? The cyclists and users seem to be unaware of the speed they're doing and the impact of them and their bike or scooter on a person, especially the elderly. Now, query that came in, and we have a query, and I think we have an answer here as well. Just give me a moment. We've been overwhelmed by the amount. This is from the County Secretary of Donegal GAA. We've been overwhelmed by the amount of teams that have entered our 50th anniversary celebrations day on July 21st. That was yesterday. We unfortunately had to make a few decisions due to health and safety, and we'll have to cap the numbers of children playing to 500. There are 1,533 children looking to take part on the day. It's a great sign for ladies football. Under the existing Go Games programme, there are all county blitzes planned for those ages as well. So those who don't get to play on the 21st will have plenty of opportunity at others. The Go Games committee will do a draw to decide which teams will be coming, but every club that's entered will have at least one team there. Numbers per team will be capped as well. We're hoping to have the team selected sent out later. Now, this is from last week, obviously. Apologise for this, but we did not anticipate the demand. Now, we're going to go to the phone, because we are joined on line one by Raymond, who is an American with a dual Irish and American citizenship, who is living in this country. Raymond, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you? How's the form?
I'm very well. The form's grand with me. Thank you very much indeed. Now, you vote independent, And I'm going to ask you, as an independent, what your take is on the big news story of the past 24 hours has been, which is, of course, that Joe Biden is stepping aside.
It's sort of difficult. I mean, in a sense, I sort of feel sorry for Joe Biden. You know, he's had a number of health issues that I guess have been sort of documented over the last number of months in here. And, you know, he's getting on. I mean, there are people in the United States well into their 90s that, you know, 100%, you know. And, I mean, it's a lot of pressure being, obviously, an American president in here. But, you know, like, there's a lot of, I'm an independent, there's a lot of things I would totally disagree with, you know, Joe Biden on his foreign policy in different areas of the world, et cetera, here. You know, but having said that, you know, last week there was a Republican National Convention and Donald Trump gave a speech and it was like 90 minutes long. And Trump, at least in my view, he had maybe a once in a century opportunity to sort of unite the country. You know, he could have came out and said, let's make America great together instead of let's make America great again. And that would, you know, change the whole dynamics because there's tremendous, tremendous division in the United States. And, you know, there's a lot of inequality too. You know, it's far, far from being perfect these days. So, I sort of feel sad for Biden in here because it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's almost a humiliation for him.
Yeah. But the debate crystallized everything. But even since the debate and the mistake at the United Nations introducing Zelensky as Putin, and the clamor within the Democratic Party, it started with a few quiet words in the ear. And maybe should Joe Biden and his confidants and his family have seen the writing on the wall then and not allowed it to drag on as long as it did? Because, I mean, the one thing that I can't agree with this morning in all the coverage is people say Joe Biden's shock withdrawal. I think we had got to the point where it would have been a shock if he didn't.
I mean, Donald, this has sort of been going on for a couple of number of years in here. Everything is, from what I gather, has been kept very, very quiet. I mean, he's got a lot of confidants, and there's almost like a iron curtain around him that, you know, publicly, you know, this is the way it is, and what happens privately, you can't penetrate into it. And, you know, I mean, a lot of this stuff, it almost goes back to Barack Obama. In his last year as president, he endorsed Hillary Clinton, and he basically wanted nothing to do with Joe Biden, and Joe Biden was his presidency. And you know, had Biden run in 2016 as opposed to Hillary Clinton, the likelihood would have been he would have beaten Donald Trump, and there wouldn't be any issues that currently exist in here. You know, and then I understand 2020, you know, Obama was basically really didn't want Biden back to run for president. And so, you know, like, I don't know how you frame a lot of this. It's difficult.
Does Kamala Harris, if, as is being presumed, Kamala Harris, the incumbent vice president, now takes the nomination, and there's a lot of discussion, I'm sure, to be done, does Kamala Harris has a chance, or is this election now Trump's to lose?
It was Trump's to lose had he seized the moment a week ago, and instead of a sort of a rambling 90-minute speech, gave a 20 or 30 minute speech and said, you know, let's everybody get united. Yes, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I've made mistakes in the past. I just survived an assassination attempt by, you know, the grace of God by a quarter of an inch in here. And, you know, I'm a new person. You know, he had that opportunity. Now, Kamala Harris, you know, like I grew up in San Francisco. She grew up directly across the bridge, the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge from me. You know, so I don't, you know, and she went on to become the Attorney General in California. And from what I read, like she was a prosecutor and she was a, how do you put it, a totally, totally ruthless prosecutor. Like if you were a black man and her father was from Jamaica and you got caught on some little marijuana situation or something else, I mean, she had her people just throw the book at you, and you know, there were thousands, you know, that was, you know, tossed into prison in California.